irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Marvin Smith, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm Alan Cardoza, and every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon, this show will bring you special guests that can inspire, educate, and entertain while bringing answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. Answers for the Family will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. Now, as I'm sure many of you expected to hear Marvin's voice with me this morning, we're reminded of the reality of what he does when he's not on the air with me. Now, be it locating a runaway, escorting a teen to a specialized program, or meeting with school districts, Marvin's willingness to help is always there, which is something I appreciate so much about him. Now, I also appreciate what our guest has done for families all across the country. Deborah L. Tillman is an authentic and powerful voice for parents and is not afraid to be open and honest with them. Her no-nonsense, yet loving approach landed her the role as America's super nanny on Lifetime Television. Now, Deborah holds a master's degree in early childhood special education from John Washington University. She has been a reoccurring parenting expert on the Steve Harvey television show, and she's also been seen on The View, The Today Show, The Katie Show, Home and Family Network, Wendy Williams, and CNN, to name just a few. And I've seen a few of those myself. Now, Deborah has also been featured in Essence Magazine, Jet, Ebony, and Parent Magazines, amongst others. Our guest is also the author of Stepping Out on Faith, How to Open a Quality Child Care Center, and our topic today, Parenting on Purpose, a Menu for Raising Children in Today's Society. Now, Deborah is a highly sought-after facilitator and speaker. Her commitment, persistence, tenacity, and love for children and their families is evident. One of Deborah's quotes that I believe and is definitely worth repeating, it does not always take a village to raise children. It takes a parent who is positioned to adequately raise, educate, nurture, and train the future generation. Deborah, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to come on the show. When Jan told me that we could have you on the show, I said this is truly the perfect guest for us. The show's name is Answers for the Family, and having seen you, in some of your interviews on television, that's what you provide, and that's what I love, is that I see that as parents bring up various issues, things that all of us have to deal with sometimes as parents from day to day, you have answers. And in most cases, they're really right there where, where any of us can grasp it. And I think that's one of the things that I like so much about what you're doing, both on Super Nanny and with your new book.
Thank you.
Now, we have questions, and some of the things that is great and appreciate our listeners who instant message in questions or who send questions in, via email or call. One of them that came in that I thought was so perfect. It says, as you discussed on the Today Show, how do you unspoil a child?
I know, good question, right? Yeah. I think the first thing is to recognize as parents, like I understand, and I'm sure most of us who are parents understand how difficult it is to raise a child in this generation just because of so much going on. And the fact that the children have so much access to everything, social media, television, they're kind of left on their own sometimes because mom and dad are working. So it's just a whole lot of stressors that parents go through. But what I tell parents is that that, you know, it's better to not have to fix the problem if you start out well. And so what I try to do is be proactive. So, yes, we know about unspoiling them, which takes a lot more time. But if we could put some things in place so that the child doesn't get to a place where they feel, you know, like, you know, a sense of expectancy or, you know, a sense of entitlement. This is supposed to be because the parent has trained the child to be a certain way for so many years. Then we don't have to undo the work. Years down the road. I always tell people it takes a longer time. It's not hopeless, but it takes a longer time to deal with a child at 10 years old when we could have dealt with them at 2. And so what I tell parents in terms of unspoiling them is really just, you know, you got to put rules in place. You have to put rules in place that the child understands. I'm a big rule person. And the reason why is because sometimes parents get upset with children a lot because, you know, they're out in public and they do something and then the parent is embarrassed and then they react. And I say, well, you know what? Did the child know that it wasn't okay to, you know, stand on the table or, you know, something really outrageous? Why? Because at home they're not allowed or not told to sit at the table when it's time to eat. You know, training a child and keeping them from being spoiled does happen outside of the home. It happens inside the home. So if we want children to be, you know, respectful and, you know, courteous and, you know, listen to us and not be defiant and disrespectful, then we have to set some standards in the house. And so I tell parents, okay, what is it that they're doing wrong? What is it that you want to be done? If it's use your listening ears, then tell the child, use your listening ears. This is the visual that we're going to have for a child who's younger to say, you know, to have a chart maybe that says, you know, use your listening ears. Use gentle touches, you know, because little kids just hit everybody. And so whatever rule it is, it doesn't matter what it is, but whatever your child is doing, put the rule in place ahead of time. Be proactive so that when they break the rule, then you can give them some consequences, whatever that consequence is. And so for young children, you know, I really focus on 0 to 5. So young children for me is that, you know, you would lose what they like, or it will be the calm down corner. And if you watch the show, then you know some of the techniques that I do for children. But definitely staying consistent and putting rules in place is really the major thing for parents so that they don't have to deal with unspoiling them when they turn, you know, 6 years old.
Well, now talk to us a little bit about the word no, because one of the things I know that I've, you know, heard from parents, and they go, I don't, you know, the child doesn't understand no. We're in the store, and the child doesn't understand no. And one of the questions that I think of is, well, how many times do you have to say it before something happens at home? And why do you think it's different now out in the public?
Well, the thing is that you that's a good point. What, again, I see a lot of that going into all the homes that I visit. And what I tell parents, even at 18 months, 16, 18 months, that's when the children start, you know, you have to know early childhood development. So you know that that's the time when they're starting to come into their own. You know, if they don't want to eat, it's not like being an infant where they just open their mouth and they eat or they cry. You know, at this point, they're like pushing the food away if they don't want it. And so at that moment, in those months when they're really, really cute and you just want to baby them, I tell parents, still, you have to show and tell. So you won't say no, which all parents do. Like, you know, you have a child that say they don't want to eat their peas, so they push them aside. The parent says, oh, no, no, baby, don't do that. And I tell parents, well, they really don't get no at that age. They don't understand what you're saying. So what I tell parents to do is give them show and tell. Show them what to do. If you don't want your peas, I mean, literally look at the child at 18 months. If you don't want your peas, this is what I want you to do. And then show them what to do. It's almost like the better case scenario is like hitting. They'll swipe at you at 18 months. And then you'll say, oh, that's so cute. You'll either say that's cute or don't, and or no. And what I tell parents to say is take their hand, put it on your hand, do like make it a gentle touch. I wish this was where you could see me, but make it like a gentle touch and say, use your gentle touches and then smile, because children that age are very much into catching the feeling and your facial expressions. And so when you touch your hand and you smile, softly, they understand that, okay, that's a good thing. Then you hit your hand, not their hand, but hit your hand, and then make a mean face and say, I don't like that. And then do the soft, gentle touch again and say, I like that, and then clap. I know it sounds like a long, drawn out, but when you show and tell a child, then they get it more than saying no, no. So the parent says no, 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 and then by the time the child's 2 years old, they're saying no back to you, and then you're looking at them saying, don't tell me no, but you just taught them for 2 years to say no.
There
you
go.
Again, yeah, it's got to be show and tell.
So now let's take that to the level of unspoiling them, and now somebody that has a 5 year old that is hitting because they didn't do this then, and I know you said it's harder, but what at that point can they start doing? Is it essentially the same thing, or because they're a little bit older, how do you approach them then?
Well, if they waited till 5 years old to correct them, then they have to put it in place. So once the child knows the rules, then you have to put consequences in place. So if they're 5 years old and you know they like to, I don't know, go outside or play on, a lot of times these days children are playing on technology. So that would be taken away. Okay, you don't want to listen to mommy, then this is going away. You have to put consistent consequences in place, and you can't feel bad as a parent for correcting your child. Oftentimes, the parents I deal with, they feel guilty. They have to work all day, all night. They stressed out. They go through traffic. And by the time they get home, they just want to give the child anything that they can give them just to shut them up. And so then you're not right. Then you wind up not teaching a child anything, or they give in to the child because it's just like, oh, just be quiet. Here's the candy. What I find is that you got to be consistent with the correcting, and you have to follow through.
Well, and you brought up a great point when you started talking about the electronic devices that they all have, and even at that age. Can we talk a little bit about the parents that are using those as the new babysitter?
Yes. It is the new babysitter. It's always been like it's either TV or, I say we outsource our children to different things. So it used to be you outsource them to the neighbors or outsource them to the babysitter. Now we're outsourcing the technology to them. And at this point, I am not against technology, but I am against the fact that we are using it as, babysitters and not really spending enough time with our children. And I think that's why we're having a lot of problems. I always tell parents, listen, turn off the technology and tune into your child, because when you just hand them the iPad, hand them the whatever it is, the device, what you're saying is that, like, I don't have time for you. And this does. And so when you're doing that, you're not connecting with them. You're not establishing a relationship with them. You're not cultivating the relationship with them. I mean, we don't even sit down at the dinner table anymore. That's like I have a really bad pet peeve about parents who do not take the time to listen and talk to their children. And that's, it's just be present in the moment. It doesn't take a lot. Even if it's 15 minutes, let that 15 minutes out of the day be all about them and you communicating with them. But to say that, I spend time with my child, I take them to baseball practice, I take them to, that's not really quality time with your child. And so I fight a lot with parents in terms of really understanding what quality time is and what kind of conversations we should be having with our children, particularly when they get to that preteen age, when they're going through a whole lot of, peer pressure and hormones and bullying and this and that. And oftentimes you don't want to talk to them because they're in such a bad attitude. But that's the time to really listen. I say God gave us two ears and a mouth to listen more and talk less at that moment. And we as parents just have to make a conscious effort to do it.
Yeah, and I love that, because I mean if they're not listening to us, who are they listening to? On the other end of that electronic device that is giving their message, whatever that message may be. So let me ask, what do you believe at this point are the major issues for parents who are trying to raise children in the 21st century?
Oh, it's just it's an uphill battle right now. I mean, when I think about how I was raised, you know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, versus what's happening now, it's so sad. Because honestly, if we say children are the future, then we have to prepare our children to have a future. And if we don't prepare them now, then what kind of future are we going to have? So it can't just be lip service. We got to walk the walk and talk the talk. We have to put some things in place to really be able to train up these children in the way that they should be going. And so the biggest thing for me is, again, what we talked about, like no time. Like parents, we understand that everybody gets the same 24 hours in a day, but we have to make a conscious effort when we are blessed to have children to spend really quality time with them, to talk to them, to sow into them, to speak life into them. And when I say speak life, that means just, you know, speak positive over their lives. I oftentimes go into houses and I hear parents all the time, see how he is, Miss Deborah? He's just a brat. See how he is, Miss Deborah? He's just lazy. See, and I'm like, okay, we have to change the language, first of all. If you don't change the language to really believe that this child can be more than what you're looking at right now, then it's going to be a self-fulfilling prophecy, and the child's going to wind up being exactly what you said they would be. I mean, I grew up with my father saying, you could be anything, the sky is the limit, and that was in the 60s, okay, when we were going through a whole lot of racism and civil rights movement, and he was like, look, you could be the president of the United States, and it wasn't just something that I thought about, it's something that I really believed. Because why? Because my father told me so. And so I think that as parents, we need to learn to lead by example and start speaking life into our children so that they understand that I can do better. I might not be great at this moment, but, you know, the moment does not equal the lifetime. And so we have to do better as parents to train up our children and put that into them. And another thing we're not doing with children, okay, I say we're not spending enough time, we're also not speaking positively over their lives. That's a big thing.
And I could not agree more. From your lips, I think if everybody can take two things from this conversation, and that is the most valuable thing you can give your child is time over and above all of the other things, the material things. And the second thing is just what you said, present a positive view of their life. Focus on the fact that, I mean, we live in the most blessed country. We live in one of the most blessed times. I mean, there are so many things that are out there that we can focus on. But I think that we get caught up in the rush. We get caught up in, I think the media contributes to the fact that, you know, let's just continue to focus on the negative. And we as parents, you know, have an obligation to our children to pull them away from that and to focus on all of the great things that we do have here. So, yeah, I could not agree more.
Exactly. Yeah, the fact that we should spend more time being grateful as opposed to focusing on what's negative. And I often tell parents, okay, so anybody could come in and tell you that, but if you don't know the tools, if you don't have the strategies to be able to do that, then I can walk out of your house and you'll still be the same way. And so what I tell parents to do, okay, why don't you try, instead of waking up being upset about Johnny who just dropped, you know, the glass of milk, or, you know, your husband that did something, why not wake up, and I have like a little grateful journal that I use every morning, and I write down, and especially when my son Zeppelin was young, I did this all the time, but you write down your three things that you're grateful for before you even step your feet out of the bed. Have your little journal and write down three things that you're grateful for, and think three things that you're looking forward to for the day. Doesn't take a whole lot of time, 5 minutes, but it puts you in a mindset of when you go into the kitchen and he knocks over something, you're not reacting. You know what I mean? You're responding. And so what do we need to do to clean up the milk? we need to get a paper towel. Okay, so let's get a paper towel. It's not. It, things don't become such a big deal when you take time to focus your mind, retrain yourself, and then really take care of yourself. Because oftentimes, when parents aren't parenting correctly, it really comes down to them just not spending enough time with themselves. I mean, they're overworked, overstressed, you know, just everybody's stressed out. And so then you're lashing out at your child when if you took that 5 minutes to just breathe and relax and calm down before you respond, then you would have a better reaction and more progress.
I so agree. While you were saying that, I was thinking of a family that we were working with, their teenager that was having some drug and alcohol issues, and the parents had been advised by an educational consultant that this particular young person should go to a specialized program. And so, and as I'm talking with the parents, and the parents are saying, I don't know if we can do this, you know, we can't afford this, and so on, I said, well, I mean, I go, you know, I'm not there to discuss your financial situation, but you know, what is more important at this time? And they said, you don't understand. They said, you know, we've got a $3,500 payment on our house. We've got a payment on our new Suburban. We've got a payment on our you know, our summer home up in the mountains. We've got a payment on our new Jaguar, and we're trying to send their older brother to college, and you're telling me that this child needs to go to, you know, to this program for, you know, or my job was just to take him there. A professional had recommended to them, and I just stopped and I said, well, I think at this point you need to just sit down and decide what your priorities are.
Exactly.
You know, because they're saying they can't afford it, but you can afford a summer house, and you can afford a Jaguar, and you can afford a new Suburban, and you can afford all of these things. And yes, it's great that you're putting their older sibling into college, but, you know, do you want your child on the street? I mean,
right?
You know, right. So yeah,
it does a lot. Oftentimes, it does come down to priorities and really thinking about what is important. What's in the best interest of this child is usually the line I give the parents. What's in the best interest of the child? It's not about you, you know, and oftentimes parents think everything is about them. So it's not about you. It's about how are we going to get this child to reach their fullest potential? What can I do? How can I help lead, guide, direct so that they finally get to a place where they need to be? And then what steps do I need to put in place in order to get them there? And once you focus on that, once that becomes your focus, because why? Because you want this child to be better for society. It's not, you know, it's not important the day we were born, the day we die. It's important to dash in between what we do with our lives. And so once you have a child, it is about getting them to the place that they need to be.
Yep. And, you know, you just touched on something else that I love so much about the way in which you deal with parents. And I want to shine a light on it for a minute so that everybody that maybe is driving and didn't catch that point.
Mm-hmm.
You're asking the parents a question.
Mm-hmm.
There's people out there that spend a lot of time telling people what to do, and and asking parents to look at a situation. Now, granted, their answer may not be the right one at that moment, but it makes them think. And I think that's
right.
it's such a great way that I have seen when I've seen you working with parents. I just think that's so beautiful that the parents get, you know, in most cases, they get it, but they get it because they were asked the right questions.
Exactly. And hasn't that always been the case? I mean, I can look at myself. That's just human nature. And for a long time, I don't know if you know my story. I'm sure you do, but I don't know if the listeners know. I had 7 child care providers in 3 months when I had my son Zeppelin. My husband and I, we did our research. We went to daycare centers. We went, and I had to go back to work. And so we interviewed people. But I had 7 in 3 months. Who does that? I mean, I had the worst of the worst. I had cried every day because he was in somebody's house who was abusing him. And my question kept being, why is this happening to me? Why is this? Why am I the one going through this? I'm sure nobody else is going through this but me. I was asking the wrong question. When finally, after the 7th, I said, what do you want me to do? what is it you want me to do? That was the right question. That's the only time I heard the seven words come back to me. I want you to do it better. That was the answer. I was asking the wrong question.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take a break. If anybody wants to follow along with us, go to Deborah's website. That is www.deborahltillman.com, and it's spelled DEBORAHL. Tillman, TILLMAN.com. You can go to Deborah's website. She has tips, she has tools, she has techniques. There's lots of things you can do to follow on, not only with us, but to go on at other times as well. So stay with us. You're listening to Answers for the Family, and we will be right back.
Founded over 25 years ago, to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. And our guest today is Deborah L. Tillman. She is Super Nanny on Lifetime Television. And our topic today is Parenting on Purpose. That's the title of her new book, A Menu for Raising Children in Today's Society. Now, Deborah, one of the questions that I know that I get frequently, and I'm sure you get it as well, but in this day and age of there being so many single parents out there, what suggestions can you provide for single parents that are trying to balance working and raising their children?
Wow, that's a good one. I know, and I applaud anybody out here who is trying to raise their child. It's hard enough with two parent households, but when you're trying to do it by yourself, it's that much more taxing. And so I do applaud those who are trying to get it done. If I had to give a piece of advice, what I would say is eliminate the guilt. I find that the single parents I work with, a lot of them carry a lot of weight. And the weight is the guilt. They feel guilty about everything. They feel guilty about the fact that they didn't choose the right partner or that the child doesn't have either a mother or a father, because I deal with single dads too. And they just are overburdened with guilt. And I tell parents, listen, in order to be the best that you can be for your child, you're going to have to lay aside that, because really stop looking in your past and move forward. I mean, if we keep looking in our rearview mirror, there's no way we can move forward. We're going to crash. And so I tell parents, you know, let go of the guilt, you know, write it down, and then just in your mind make a conscious effort to let it go. I mean, I know it sounds, a lot of what I do, and oftentimes people look at me and like, really? It's so simple. But it's so simple if we get sick and tired of being sick and tired. You have to be sick enough of the way you are in order to change. And as single parents, you know, you carry around the guilt, you carry around all these weights, and then you're not able to be in the moment with your child because you're thinking about all the things you coulda, shoulda, woulda done, and then you don't do it right. And the fact of the matter is that when they feel guilty, what they do is overcompensate. When they overcompensate, then you're not raising the child on purpose, because then you're feeling like, okay, the child's guilty. I feel guilty about the child not having, I don't know, I'll just make up something, the mother present in their lives. So now as the dad, whatever the child wants, I'm going to give them. Whatever the child asks for, I'm not going to say no, because I want to be seen as the parent who they get along with. And I keep telling parents, you know, it's not about being your child's friend. It's about raising this child up to be the best that they can be, and sometimes that takes some them not liking you. And I'm okay with them not liking me, uh-huh. you know, at 0 to 15 or 16 or even 17. My mother and I had a rocky relationship until, you know when? When I had a baby. And I started raising him. And then I said, oh, my goodness, is this what I put my mother through? I really, you know, I remember picking up the phone, calling her and saying, Mom, I'm so sorry. You were the best, you know. And so we don't see the forest for the trees because we're just so clouded. And I say to her, you know, calm down. Get rid of the guilt. Start parenting in a way where, you know, you're not feeling guilty about anything. Really, it is what it is. We're in the situation that we're in. All things work together for the good. It really is going to be okay. But I'm your parent. I'm going to lead by example and give you the best advice. And it's not about giving you what you want. It's about giving you what you need.
Oh, perfect. I love it. And I've used a similar statement with a parent who was giving them everything. And finally, I just stopped and I said, let me explain something. I said, your child does not need a 40-year-old best friend, even if it's you. You know?
I love that. Exactly.
You know, it's like, exactly. you know, your child's 15. Your child needs a 15-year-old best friend, and it needs a 40-year-old parent that's going to
do
their job, which is parent.
Which is to parent, exactly.
Yes.
Well, it goes back to the acronym, right? Parent, to be being in position to adequately raise, educate, nurture, and train.
Ooh,
that's
like
why
that.
We're here.
I like that. Ooh, I got to jot that one down. Hey, we have a listener question that is coming over.
Oh, good.
And this one says, there was a time when grandparents played an important role in the family, especially in providing structure for the smaller children. Now it falls on working parents who are struggling to keep them fed and a roof over their heads. I know this reality because I am one of those individuals. My children are starving for attention, and I am very much looking to read your book, which I just ordered, as I am drowning in guilt and exhaustion. I do hope it'll bring some methods to get our lives back in order. Wow.
That is so sweet, and I so thank you. I'm so humbled the fact that they're buying the book. But just, I kept the book very simple because I know how busy our parents are, working parents. And so it's 100 pages. It's 100 pages of no fluff. It's all, if you know me, you know I'm about walk the walk, talk the talk. I just say what it is very simplistically, and I give you the real menu. So it winds up being something that is really an easy read, but not only that, because I love food so much, it starts out with an appetizer. It goes into meeting the challenges, which is the big entree. It talks about the dessert, which are the things that we really have to give our children. You know, the dessert is the most favorite part, right? So that's the part that we really have to give our children, you know, the love, the attention, the joy, the peace, the long-suffering even, because a lot of us, you know, it's not all roses when you're raising children. You know, you go through some stuff. You go through periods of when your child's slamming doors and has earphones on his head and not, you know, talking to you. But there's ways to go through that and deal with it and come out on the other side. But if you're looking at the situation that you're in, it's very difficult to see the sunshine at the end of the rainbow. You know, I always tell parents, your current situation does not equal your permanent destination. And I say that a lot in the book, like, stop worrying about where you are right now. We understand that we're going to go through trials and tribulations, ups and downs. But if you can use these tools to get through, then this isn't going to last always. You know what I mean? So it's all about hope.
Yep. And I love the fact that, I mean, when you mention it being 100 pages, and I think that's another beautiful point is that if we have a parent who is stressed and they feel that they don't have time for their child, probably wouldn't be a good idea to expect that they're going to go read a 400-page book.
No, not at all.
You know,
yeah,
so
they're just not going to do it.
Exactly. So what you're saying is, let's get to the point. Let's
get to the point.
Yeah.
That's right. Get to the point. Get to the main issues of what children are dealing with right now and what parents are dealing with right now. You know, the disrespect, the talking back, the rolling the eyes. And we can do it without beating up on our kids, you know, which is another thing that I'm totally, you know, I'm sure you know, I'm totally against, like, beating up on children because I see too much of it traveling around this country with parents who are, like, smacking them in the face and hitting them in the mouth. And my grandmother did it to me, so I'm going to do it to them. And I'm like, wow, there's just too much knowledge that is out here now. It's just too much information. It's too much where we have to keep going back to the old way of doing things. It just doesn't work for this generation.
Absolutely. There's a whole lot of other things that were going on 100 years ago that we don't know either. So
exactly.
So now another area that I think many of us as parents fall into, which is that of the blended families. So what suggestions would you provide to parents of these blended families and, you know, or just families who have gone through a divorce and maybe even if they haven't blended yet, there's still so much more that is now placed on the parents, which obviously then transfers over onto the kids.
Yeah. Well, number one for me always when I'm dealing with families that have either gone through a divorce or blending, trying to blend their new family together, is communication. Communication is number one. I go right into the houses and I say, okay, what communication techniques do you have? And they're looking at me like, what? We just talk to each other, I guess. Is that what you mean? And I'm like, no. You've got to have some sort of communication in place because what you find when you're trying to blend families together is that one, like the biological kids of one side is one way and then they're not getting along with the other side. And then, you know, they like to say step-parent, step-daughter, step. And I'm like, listen, when you got married, the step, you lost the step. Leave the step alone. That's the you know, that's the sister, that's the brother. So that's the first thing we need to do is get the be clear with who we are in this family. That's your sister, that's your brother, that's my son, that's my daughter. No more step. I don't know who brought that in, but I don't like it. Then we need to communicate. So put things in place. I remember working with a family where every Saturday we sat down and I said, okay, we're going to do a sensitivity, and we called it the sensitivity technique, where we sat around a table. I think it was a couple of teenagers, and then it was a 8-year-old and a 5-year-old, so 4 children in the family. And they just felt like they didn't have enough, I don't know if it was time or the parents didn't hear them, but this was an avenue where they can actually sit and be free to actually express themselves about whatever they felt in a safe environment without the parents being defensive or I didn't do that, I didn't say that, you know. So I would tell the parents, okay, you can't say anything, you just have to listen. And that was the hardest thing in the world. I mean, the parents kept interjecting when the child tried to say something, and it just became, I mean, it really took a good 3 weeks for the parents to sort of get the technique of, listen, you're supposed to be listening, not talking. Your child is talking. And then the child was able to express themselves and really have the parents hear them. Because oftentimes kids really, the kids aren't really the problem. When I go in houses, you know, the parents say, look, Miss Deborah, look, see what they're doing. And I'm just kind of looking at it. But then in the next moment, they're looking at their husband saying, I told you to take out that garbage. You're so stupid. So then I'm looking at them like, okay, so I see what the problem is. And in most cases, I try to go in and not be judgmental and blaming the parents, but I have to give them the truth. And sometimes the truth doesn't feel so good. Uh-huh. And so I have to say, well, do you think Johnny's acting this way because he just saw the way you were acting toward your husband or the stepfather or whatever? You know, do you think he's being disrespectful to him because he's watching you? I would say children are watching everything you do. And oftentimes they hear less of what you say and they follow more of how you live. So they're always watching how you live. And so for me, I tell parents, you know, really when I'm dealing with blended families, single parents, but really everybody, communication is the number one key. Put techniques in place to communicate with one another. And then parents have to be on the same page. I mean, all the time. I go in houses where it's like the father is the lenient one. So when they want to ask something, they'll go to the father. And then he won't say, did you ask your mother? Or not even, did you ask your mother? Just, we're going to talk about it, and then we'll get back to you. How about using that technique? as opposed to saying yeah. yes, and then you got going back to mom, and then they're playing you off of each other. It's just crazy. So it's a lot going on, but I say if you can get on the same page and if you can communicate and if you can let the biological parent, in most cases, because I'm finding that that's a problem, deal with the discipline in the very beginning, uh-huh. that would be good. That would be good. That would take away a lot of the issues of, well, my dad did it this way or my mom, you know. Just let the biological parent deal with the discipline issue.
Well, now I've got a personal question for you.
Okay.
Because you mentioned about not liking the term step. I also don't like the term yeah. step, but I am somebody who travels all over the world, so I have people that know me, but they may only see me once or twice a year. So, mm-hmm. but yet I've known them for 25 or 30 years. So,
wow.
So what I did when I came into that situation, because actually there had been a misunderstanding when I took a daughter who a lot of these people had never met, that someone would call a stepdaughter. There was people that got the wrong impression. what we've done is, this is my bonus daughter. Now, if it's people that I've never met, then it's just my daughter. But if it's in a situation to where there are people that have known us or whatever. So anyway, the term that we decided on was bonus. So because I looked at it as we need to see this is a bonus to our family. This is a positive. Mm-hmm. This is a plus. Mm-hmm. So so I'm proud to say that, you know, that I have who is now an adult, but you know, an adult bonus daughter. and very proud of that. So mm-hmm. so what's your
I like that.
Okay. So
yeah, no, I actually like that because when you look at the word bonus, I mean, it means, you know, gift, blessing, God sent. So all of those are great words. So, you know, I was, you say, you know, I was lucky enough to have these children, in your mind, you know, lucky enough to birth these children, but then this is my bonus. This is an extra added gift to me.
That's right.
And our family. And I love that because it's different from step. Step makes me feel like, you know, I'm just something on the side. It doesn't connect. Yeah.
I'm with you. I never liked that one as
well. I love bonus.
Now we have another emailed in question. This one reads,
okay.
I am a second grade teacher in Los Angeles who is at the mercy mm-hmm. of a system that ties our hands in dealing with unruly children. Is your book just intended for parents, or do the techniques work for educators as well?
Oh, such a good question. Oh, my goodness. You have to come to my HOPE conference. I deal with educators for that. It's a little bit, it's more geared toward parenting on purpose. I mean, it's exactly, again, the simple lady, okay? So parenting on purpose is exactly what it says. If you're not going to be a parent, if you're not going to parent on purpose, then don't be a parent, pretty much, because everything you do is on purpose. Okay, so as far as the educator is concerned, you're dealing with a whole lot of different dynamics, okay? So, yes, it doesn't really address the educational system, let's put it that way.
Uh-huh.
But some of the techniques I use for children, they could glean from. I'll put it that way.
Okay, fair
okay.
enough.
Okay, so, yeah.
All right, so I've just looked up. We've got about 5 or 6 minutes, but one of the things that I know, time is just flying by. Can you give us, maybe our listeners, like your top 5 parenting tips, those things that people are going to feel like, you know, I'm so glad that I listened because I took away a couple of things that are going to help me right now.
Yeah. Okay, top 5 parenting tips. One would be lead by example. I'm really big on parents leading by example and not being hypocrites. Not saying, you know, don't do this, but then 5 minutes later, the parent is doing it. You know, like, Johnny, we should be honest. We should tell the truth. I'm asking you a question. Tell the truth. But then next week, the neighbor is at the door, and you say, Johnny, tell him I'm not home. Okay, they're listening. They're seeing that, yeah, you're just not leading by example. So we don't want to do that. So I say all of my tips always end on a positive. So lead by example is the first thing you could do. Second thing I would say is put positive rules in place for whatever you want, and rules not just for the house, but rules for life. So we, so then again, we don't do lessons for a moment. We do lessons for a lifetime. So just because I want you to be honest in the house means that I want you to be honest at school, means I want you to be honest, you know, when we're at a restaurant, means honesty across the board, okay? So I would say put rules in place and be consistent with the following through when they break the rule. And that's the hardest thing for parents, following through. Put the rule in place, follow through with the consequences. That's number two. Okay? That's a big one. Then, of course, my favorite is spend quality time with your child. And quality means taking out some moments in the day. For me, it was a half an hour, and we did it at bedtime, where I read the book, but then we just talked. It wasn't just read the book and then go to bed. It was read the book, ask questions about the book, but then we spent a half an hour just talking. Tell me about your day. And then, like, as they get older, you'll hear, it was fine. Okay, but then you want to, you want to ask open-ended questions.
Yes.
And then if that doesn't work with school, then start with, oh, well, tell me about your friend. How's your friend doing? Like, really, just anything that can get them to open up to you to establish this relationship. So, you know, just like us, we're in mood swings sometimes. So sometimes you might get shorter answers than longer answers. But still, you're opening the lines of communication and spending time with your child so that you're connecting, you're bonding. And that's so important, particularly when they're young, so that by the time they get 15, they're so used to you doing this every day that even when they don't feel like talking to you at night, something is going to come up. Well, I know I didn't feel like talking to you, Mom, last night, but let me tell you about such and such and such and such. And then it's like, you know, an hour goes into it and you're like, okay, no, you got to go to bed. Like, for real, you got to go to bed. But it's only because you established that relationship.
Yep.
Number four, I would say speak life into your children. I'm really big on speaking life, and that means being positive. Doesn't always mean things are going to be rosy, but even if my child's acting like, I don't know, I'm trying to give a good word, so I'll say knucklehead. Everybody knows what knucklehead is, right? If they're, even if they're acting like that, you speak life into them. You say, you know what? There's greatness in you. I know there's greatness in you. And then in your mind, you're like, I don't see it right now, but there is greatness in you. And it's going to come out. It's going to come out if I keep speaking it. And you keep just that sense of hope in front of you, that sense of positiveness, you know, that sense of, you know, it's not where I am right now. It's where Johnny, where I know he could be 10 years from now. So I'm going to do whatever I can, all my power, all my sacrifice, whatever I need to do what's best for Johnny so that he can be better for the world. So, yes, speaking life is a big thing for me. And then the fifth one I would have to say, is probably expand your territory. I know that sounds interesting, but as much as I travel around this country, I'm really finding that we're so insular. Like, it's all about us. It's all about my little family. And if my little family is fine, then I'm fine. And for me, I just want us to expand our territory to love. I don't have to birth a child to love a child. You know, it doesn't matter to me whether, you know, you're white, you're black, you're in this zip code or that zip code. I can love all children because the more I love you, the more I pour into you, the more I empower you and encourage you and uplift you, then the world is a better place. And I just think for us as Americans, we're so blessed to be in this country. I've traveled all over the world, but we are so blessed to be in this country at this time, in this place. And then why not just spread things out. Love somebody else's child. It doesn't take a whole lot to encourage somebody else's child to be that cheerleader for them, because sometimes the parents just aren't able to do it. And it would be great to have a coach, to have a next door neighbor, to have a teacher, to have somebody uplift that child so that they wind up reaching their fullest potential. And if we can all work together to do that, then I think this world would be a much better place.
Wow. I love it. You know, You mentioned, and I've got a bunch of things that I'm looking at the time, so let me just run through some things real quick. But one is one of the things I just heard you say, and I'll put it in a few different words, which is, you know, you're saying, if I speak it out, they can breathe it in.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
So now you mentioned about a Hope conference, and I made a note of it. Where can people find out more about this, and maybe even sometime off the air, I'd love to talk to you more about it as well.
sure. It's my nonprofit that I started because I was getting countless emails every day of parents saying, help me, help me, help me. And I couldn't be everywhere for everybody. And so I started a parenting movement where parents work together to raise, rebuild, and restore the next generation on purpose. They can go to www.theparentingmovement.org. It tells about the conference once a year called the Hope Conference, helping optimistic parents everywhere.
And then they could join
the movement.
Yeah, and where is the next one? Geographically.
The next one is next April. Yep, we'll do it every year in April, and it'll be different places. So this one was in Virginia. I think next year will probably be D.C., and then we'll probably be in Atlanta because I get a lot of emails from Atlanta, and we'll hit maybe California one day. But definitely check out the events that we're doing. We do it. We have a parent teen, T-E-E-N movement, where they come to me for the summer, and I help them parent their children a lot better than what's happening in society right now.
Well, I would love to have you back on, and maybe we need to time it maybe a couple of months before this so that we can remind everybody of that. But at the same time, again, go to Deborah's website, DeborahLTillman.com. Get the book. Highly recommend it. And if you're out there, if you're driving, if you can't write these things down, go to our website, answers4thefamily.com. Go to our website. We have all of Deborah's information there. And for everybody out there, you know, with social media, like us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and go to Deborah's site and do the same. Deborah, thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, I so appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me, Alan.
All right. And for everybody out there, be with us again next week for Answers for the Family. Bye now.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Marvin Smith right here on LA Talk Radio.